The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to our Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. And coming up on the show today, we're going to talk all things UK with Kyle Tucker from The Athletic. He did a great story back early in the football season about Lynn Bowden and has done a follow-up as well. And so a lot to talk about with last weekend's performance and then a lot of Kentucky basketball as well with Kyle. Darren Hedrick, radio voice of UK women's basketball. They have a game coming up in about 2 hours, so he'll join us here shortly to talk about how things are going for Matthew Mitchell's club, undefeated, ranked in the 15th in the country. And we'll lead off with Chris Fisher from the Cat's Paws, talking about the Cats and a little basketball recruiting as well. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group. That's private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. A lot of bowl speculation to get into. There seems to be a consensus that last night's college football playoff rankings hurt Kentucky's chances for getting to the Gator Bowl because Alabama fell to 12th and is now unlikely to be in a New Year's Six Bowl. Alabama probably falls to the Citrus. Auburn is 11th. They would need to get into the top 10 to get into the New Year's Six, and it's possible. In fact, it probably should happen. But we'll see if it does. Could depend on how badly Ohio State beats Wisconsin, which I think Ohio State will certainly beat Wisconsin. Oklahoma and Baylor, if Baylor were to lose big, they might drop below Auburn. Auburn has three losses, yes, but they've played four top 10 teams. Nobody else has done that. Baylor's played one. I was looking at their schedule. But if Auburn moves up into that New Year's Six, then I think it's probably close to a cinch that Kentucky would be in the Gator Bowl. If not, I still think it's possible. Remember that the bowls and the teams give the SEC their ranking of preference. So what if the Gator Bowl ranks Kentucky as its top preference? That's probably going to be Kentucky's top preference. Now, the Music City Bowl is probably going to rank Tennessee as their top preference. They just had Kentucky a couple of years ago. Kentucky was just down there for the Vanderbilt game in Nashville. So the Tennessee would be higher on the Music City Bowl's list than would Kentucky. Now, for Tennessee, the Music City Bowl would probably be their third choice behind the Outback and the Gator. What if the Outback's not a possibility and then it's Gator or Music City? Could Tennessee end up in the Music City Bowl? Possibly. Kentucky has a strong fan base and has a more dynamic player than the Vols. So even though Kentucky lost, I think it's possible they could get the Gator Bowl over Tennessee. But we'll see how this all plays out come Sunday. Last night, college hoops. Louisville looked very impressive against Michigan, 58-43. Got to give Mike Pratt credit. He and I were talking. He hadn't been on the air with us to say this, but he and I were talking about this game last weekend, and he was making the point, you know, from a former coach's perspective, he recognizes these things, that Michigan might be a little dead-legged. Going down, playing three games in the Bahamas, probably stayed down there after the win on Thanksgiving Day to win the tournament and didn't come home until the next day. And then they turn around and go back on the road for a game and leave out again on Monday and go back out on the road. And so between Michigan not being able to make a shot and Louisville looking outstanding defensively, very impressive win for the Cardinals. Duke with a nice win at Michigan State, 87-75 last night. Kelly Kraft is bringing the UN Security Council to Kentucky, and they'll watch a game on the 14th when Kentucky plays Georgia Tech. So that's pretty cool. The UN Security Council in Rupp Arena. Links to the stories that we talk about, you can find them on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. When we come back, Chris Fisher will join the show. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. If you have a game watch party coming up for the Cats, or when we get into the bowl season, Let Wild Eggs cater it. Give them a call. They'll take care of all the food. No muss, no fuss for you. Everybody will love it. You'll be the hit of the party. So call Wild Eggs for catering and get there when you're out shopping for breakfast, brunch, or lunch. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Quarter past the top of the hour, Chris Fisher joins us from CatsPaws.com to talk a little UK sports. It was just such an amazing performance by Len Bowden last week that all the guests were just kind of weighing in on thoughts of what they saw in what was surely his final performance at Kroger Field. What were your impressions, your takeaways, Chris?
Yeah, I've heard Mark Stoops use the word remarkable a couple of times, and I don't think even that is a big enough adjective to describe not just what Len Bowden did on Saturday, but what he's done this season. I mean, it's been captivating week in and week out, what he's been able to do, much in the same way Josh Allen and Benny Snell were captivating with their performances last season. I hope fans truly appreciate what they've witnessed over the last 2 years, because it's really been three of the best individual seasons in Kentucky football history. I remember when Len Bowden signed, a lot of people that know a lot more about football than I do saying that he had the potential to be a real game changer and difference maker for the program, and he's absolutely lived up to every bit of the hype. And so Saturday's performance, if indeed it's his last game at Kentucky, I mean, what a way to go out.
Captivating's a really good word. I said on the air Saturday that normally you would think if you saw a stat box and a team threw the ball twice, you would think, oh my goodness, that's no fun to watch. And yet, to me anyway, and I think to a lot of people, it's incredibly captivating to watch because of him.
Absolutely. It to me, in some ways, it's like, and I said this to someone, it's like Tubby Smith on turf. They're going to run the ball, they're going to play defense, they're going to control the clock, and they're going to systematically choke you out. And you know it's going to happen, they know it's going to happen, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And to me, that has been absolutely fun to watch this year.
And then now we wait and see where they go on Sunday for a bowl game, and winning 8 years, I think, would qualify. Winning 8 games, if they could pull that off, would certainly qualify as a very successful season, given the circumstances they dealt with this year.
Yeah, and as good as Len Bowden has been, I can't give enough credit to the job that Mark Stoops, Eddie Grant, and this staff have done this season. Losing the pillars of your program and really the guys that laid the groundwork in changing the culture, and then the adversity they faced this season, to stop on a dime mid-season, not before the season, mid-season, and completely change your offensive identity and say, we're just going to put the ball in the hands of our best player. We're going to let him run behind our offensive line, which is as good, if not better, than any in the country, and we'll see if you can stop it. It's been an unbelievable story, and really in a lot of ways I think what sports are all about. It says a lot about the players in the program, how unselfish they've been, how everyone has really bought in. And I'd put the coaching staff, or the coaching job that this staff has done, right up there with last year, and really next to any in the country in college football this year.
You know, one thing Stoops has done that I think a lot of Kentucky fans certainly, and certainly people outside the Commonwealth, were very skeptical of, is that if Kentucky was ever going to make much noise in this league, they would need to do it in some unconventional way. They couldn't just get the kinds of guys in the trenches that you would need to be able to compete in that fashion. But yet they have done it, and are, from a recruiting standpoint, even getting better at it.
100%. I couldn't agree more. When Mark Stoops was first hired, and you know, all the fans pointed back to the air raid, and well, you know, we can't recruit offensive and defensive linemen to really run the ball. So we need, you know, some type of gimmick and throw it 60 times. And because that's the way we won, you know, 20 years ago or whatever with Tim Couch and, you know, Mike Leach and those guys. And yeah, I think it's made it all that more impressive. Kentucky had, they've had the skill guys here and there over the years, but definitely haven't had the type of offensive line that they've had in recent years to just absolutely run it down your throat. And again, it's another testament, I think, to the job that Mark Stoops and Eddie Grant have done. I hope Eddie Grant has bought himself a little bit of rope with the fans with the job that that he's done this season. It's been unbelievable.
Shift to basketball. See, there's another name on the recruiting radar for Kentucky, JT Thor, right? 6'9", class of 2020.
Yeah, he's a guy that reclassified from 2021 and had Kentucky in his top five and said they're still one of the four schools that are involved the most with him and might be looking to set up a visit here in the near future. He's already visited Kentucky, I think, a couple times on unofficial visits. But it'll be interesting to see how his recruitment plays out, even with the six signees. I think Kentucky is looking to add one more big guy. And I think how things play out with JT Thor could just depend on Kentucky standing with guys like Greg Brown and Cliff Omorui. Those guys aren't in any hurry to make a decision. But I think how things shake out with them could affect how hard Kentucky goes after a guy like JT Thor. I think all things being equal, he would probably pick Kentucky or Oklahoma State. It's unclear as to, I think, whether he would be a take for Kentucky right now. Just kind of have to wait and see how things play out.
So you think they're looking to maybe sign one more plus, what, a grad transfer possibly?
I think they're definitely looking for one more big. And JT Thor is a guy who's 6'8", 6'9", really long, can play inside, but one of those guys that has the skills to step out on the perimeter as well. I think a guy like Cliff Omorui, a true, you know, back to the basket center. He's 6'11", you know, 260 pounds. He has a 7'6" wingspan. I think he is more so what this class is lacking. But I definitely think Kentucky would like to add another big. And I think JT Thor is definitely in the mix for that.
See the video of Devin Booker hitting 45 threes in a row.
It served as a stark reminder of how good NBA players are at basketball. I mean, it was like it was like shooting a layup, honestly. It's crazy, and he's having it's translating for him on the court this season. I think probably overall having his best season as a pro, career highs in both shooting percentage and 3-point percentage. And I think the Suns won 19 games last season. They've already won 9 in 19 games this season. So much improved for Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns.
At Chris Fisher 24/7 on Twitter, catspaws.com on the web. Thank you, Chris.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Darren Hendrick will join us to talk a little Kentucky women's basketball when we come back. Kyle Tucker later on the Leach Report. Guests coming to us like Chris Fisher did on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
We go back to the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline and head over to Memorial Coliseum to check in with Darren Hendrick, who's getting to work early today. 11 a.m. Eastern Time tip for Kentucky and Charlotte. What's the deal behind the early tip, Darren?
Well, Tom, it's a kids' day here today. We've got kids from all around the surrounding schools here in Fayette County, so we're going to have a loud audience for this morning's game.
That's always fun. Kentucky's undefeated as they take on Charlotte today. And just, I guess, give us an update on how Coach Mitchell feels about where they are through these seven games, the progress that they're making.
Sure. Well, obviously they're happy to be 7-0, but there's still some things that they're trying to work on and improve. I've really been impressed by this team's defense, especially in the half court, whether they're in zone or man-to-man. Their 12 defense or their 1-2-2 press has been pretty good this year. Still trying to tighten that up a little bit, and their traps, trying to get those set better. But Kentucky's been one of the best defenses in the SEC. In fact, they're only allowing 47 points a game, which is the fewest in the league and actually third nationally. So while they still are trying to get better, I believe they're very happy with where the defense is. Excited to see the way the offense has improved in the last two or three games, starting to score more points. They're shooting better, executing well. I thought they were almost like a machine against Austin Peay. And I know, Tom, you've called your fair share of exciting games, all those the tight contests with some great teams. And it's fun, too, sometimes to just see a team in a score that's a rout on the scoreboard at the end of the game, still to see that team execute at a high level is just as much fun as watching a game-winning shot. So the last couple of weeks have been really productive for this team.
Had one of those last weekend with the football team.
That's right. That's right.
They executed at a high level. For fans that maybe have been wrapped up in football and now there's a little lull in their attention schedule, and so they can they'll start to maybe pay a little more attention to other things, and women's basketball at UK maybe comes up on their radar. They know Ryan Howard. Well, who are the other new names that fans should be tuned into?
Well, she's getting to play her first games with Kentucky, but she's actually a senior. Sabrina Haynes has been an outstanding guard, transferred in from Arizona State, had to miss that year for the transfer rules, and then she also had a year just recovering from a knee injury, so she's back in the lineup. She brings a lot of experience to this team and some much-needed production from beyond the arc. She's shooting nearly 50% from deep, so Sabrina Haynes is somebody definitely that's been fun to watch. And then inside, you still have the emergence of Kiki McKinney and Tatiana Wyatt, who are both juniors. They're shot blockers, they're shot makers, they're rebounders. So this team's got a lot of great pieces, and then they'll add Chastity Patterson in December once she becomes eligible, the transfer from Texas, a dynamic scoring point guard. She's just going to add to an already talented backcourt.
When's the first game she's eligible to play in?
I'm wanting to say that it will be December 21st at California.
So it'll be after the Louisville game then on the week from Sunday, and then she's just in time for conference play, which is – I guess I'm just looking here at the schedule. That's the next one after that trip to Berkeley.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be nice to have that game for her to get integrated into the lineup and to get some time on the floor with her teammates, because SEC play is, as you know, whatever sport it is, it can be a bear, and they go right into the frying pan with a trip to South Carolina right off the bat. So it'll be nice to get a game for her at California before they head down to Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina and Tennessee back-to-back to open the season. But, yeah, they play on the 21st, not again until January 2nd, so that will be good to give her a lot of time on the practice floor to get acclimated. Darren Hedrick will be on the call here in about 90 minutes on the UK Sports Network when Kentucky and Charlotte square off over at the Coliseum. Have a good one today, Darren.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate you having me.
Darren Hedrick, you hear him on Monday nights on the BBN radio show after we finish up with the coaches. And we'll be back down to one on the coaches show this coming Monday with the John Calipari show. I'm sure we'll probably work in another Mark Stoops show before the bowl game. But he's going to be really busy on the recruiting trail the next few days, Coach Stoops. We're halfway home on this edition of the Leach Report. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Kyle Tucker coming up next.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Welcome back into the second half of our show. Kyle Tucker with us from theathletic.com to talk UK sports. And we'll start on the football side, because you were just telling me you did the very lengthy, outstanding story on Lynn Bowden back early in the football season, and then were able to do kind of a follow-up this past weekend with what he did. But you said that there's a lot of interest in him, yeah. Going back to that first story.
Yeah, people love Lynn Bowden. That's what I've figured.
Just around here.
That's what I figured out. And obviously the Athletic, we kind of have silos. Like some of our setup is by city, and cities that have a bunch of major league teams, they're done by city. And then otherwise we have like the college football, they call it a vertical, I guess, side. And college basketball side is the group that hired me. So I'm... My allegiance is to focus on basketball, right. But I'm obviously here. And last year when they were really good in football, and this year as the Lynn Bowden story unfolded, I dabble in football just a few times a year. And so it's a little hit or miss. You know, I'm not anybody's go-to for football coverage. I think John Hale at the Courier-Journal is that guy. He's terrific. But so it's interesting to see what, you know, the handful of stories you write about football, what people get excited about. And yeah. Lynn Bowden, by far the most popular, the most popular guy I've written about. Both the stories I've written on him, the first one has been wildly successful in terms of people signing up and number of people reading it, and a ton of people read about Saturday, because Saturday was the thing that cemented. I think he was probably in Kentucky legend territory already. But if there was any doubt, there isn't now. I mean, I think he's solidified himself as a legend in this program's history, and he also just wrote himself in the record books. All the different ways you could say how great his stretch as the quarterback has been, and then that specific single game. The fact that he rushed for more yards than any SEC quarterback ever is kind of mind-boggling. So I think it's just he's really captivated people by what he's done.
That's the word I was talking with Chris Fisher earlier. Captivating is maybe the best word. I've been, you know, kind of trying to figure out the best adjective. And sometimes a headline on a story's can be misleading, because writers don't usually do the headlines. But on their most recent one about Lynn, the headline is Kentucky transformed Lynn Bowden, then Lynn Bowden transformed Kentucky. That seems to be just a classic summation of what has happened.
Yeah, and I did not write that headline. I do like it. But I would, and when I tweeted it out, I tweaked that. I think what I would say is Kentucky saved Lynn Bowden, and then Lynn Bowden saved Kentucky.
Ooh, even better.
And I don't think that's hyperbole. That's with him
from the
because
story
of the, that original like story, yeah. You know, what he came from, the path he was kind of hurtling down. I mean, he was the best, most electric player in Ohio, and not just maybe the year he was there. Like Joe Masato, who used to work with me at SEC Country, did a big story where he talked to a ton of high school coaches in Ohio about, you know, who'd been there forever. A lot of great players have come out of there. How good is he? Guys who'd coached against Maurice Claret and Ted Gidd Jr. and all, and those guys put him either in that category or ahead of those guys as a high school, dynamic high school talent, and did not have an offer from Ohio State, not till the very end. Well, I mean, there was something going on there.
Yeah.
And there was, and after sitting down, that was kind of, I think, what made that original Lynn story kind of take off is his honesty now that he's on the other side of it about, yeah, there was a reason. Like, I gave them a reason to a lot of people a reason to wonder if I was, one, serious about football, two, serious about life, if I was, you know, quite frankly, going to end up in a gang.
Yeah.
Because that life was all around him. And Stoops and Merrow talked about it Saturday. He said, I want to send a shout out to all the people in Youngstown who helped us get Lynn, who knew that if he came here, we'd take care of him and we'd make him grow up as a man.
And that's a big part of this, that Youngstown connection for the coaches and him,
yeah,
to enable them, Vince and Mark, to have some people they could trust there.
Yeah, and I think everybody around Lynn, that certainly the people who had his best interest, thought he needs to go someplace that's safe for him, you know, where they're going to look out for him. And frankly, that group of guys had Mark and Vince and some others had to help him weather some early storms at Kentucky.
I mean,
if you remember the way he would tweet,
yes,
you know, this angsty, basically making everybody think he was transferring about every other week the first year or two that he was
here.
And
who knows, maybe he was thinking about it.
Yeah. You know, this wasn't just a smooth process for him.
It can be looked at as kind of a Pollyanna thing, but this is how college sports
should work
is supposed to work.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, in situations like that,
it really is. You know, like whatever. If you want to, whatever you talk about, college sports version of the American dream. You know, like the college sports dream. Like
you see,
that's what you would hope it would.
You know,
be,
with his son on the field, and you know, all of those scenes, and
a guy who grew up without his dad, and has talked a lot about that, and that he wants to never be that. You know, he always wants to be. Have his son know that he's there, and he always runs over to him after the game and plucks him out of the stands. And you know, his mom moved down here, got her job, moved down here, and so she could help him. She told him he'd never have to put his son in daycare, so she watches, has her schedule set up so she can help watch Lynn the third during the day. It's just overall, I think there's so much good in Lynn's story. And then when you know his story, and then you see him do something transcendent like he's done over the last seven games as a quarterback, it's obvious that people have connected to that.
Yeah, I mean, if I said this a few weeks ago, and I think it's certainly true, if the college football season started in October, he'd be going to New York for the Heisman ceremony.
Yeah, I mean,
he wouldn't win it over the kid from LSU with the season they've had, but he'd be in the room.
Yeah, yeah, and we had a straw poll at The Athletic this week, and he got a vote. You know, just one out of several votes, but
I hope he does get a few. I mean, he did.
I think he might get a few.
You know, third place. If you fill out a 1-2-3 on the Heisman ballot,
yeah, all that matters is who you vote to win.
Right.
So a lot of people, I think, make statements with their second and third, certainly with their third spot on their ballot. A lot of times people will put in a guy that, you know, a defensive guy that isn't getting enough love. I mean, Lynn has been one of the most, five most impactful players in college football over the last seven games of the season. I don't know if you could name more than four more, if that. I pulled some numbers in the top four running backs in the country this year in terms of total yardage. Over the last seven games, he has outrushed them by about the closest ones, like 100 yards behind him in the last seven games. It's just like, like I said, there's the craziest thing is you could spend an hour-long show slicing up different statistical looks at what he's done, and all of them would be sort of amazing. I mean,
the only thing they lack is a signature win. That's kind of why I would like to see him get to the Gator Bowl to play a better opponent, to give him a chance to maybe play a ranked team.
Yeah, I mean, Louisville's probably the best win in that stretch, and they looked like a much improved team. But then it's almost like they almost beat Louisville so bad that it diminished the quality of the win.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you go after beating Penn State in last year's bowl game, and that's the other thing. It's not like Lynn just now started making big plays for him.
Yeah.
You know, Lynn set the tone for that Penn State win with the punt return touchdown.
Arguably, he put him in the Citrus Bowl
by saving the Missouri game. And that, you know, they were dead in the water till he had that punt return. He also ended up with, I think, his best receiving day of his career was that day as well.
Yeah.
I think he might have had the catch and step out of bounds that set up the touchdown.
Yeah, there was a post pattern. I think it was a post pattern, actually.
Yeah, I think he ran a few more yards up the sideline and got out of bounds. You know, he has impacted them in a number of ways. I mean, he had a big hand in them winning 10 games and winning the Citrus Bowl last year, and then he is the fundamental reason they're going back to a bowl game this year.
Kyle Tucker from TheAthletic.com in studio with us, and when we have guests on the phone, they come to us on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. We'll get to a break. Come right back. It's the Leach Report, Radio Network.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter, at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Kyle Tucker's with us from TheAthletic.com, and we always remind you that you should sign up for The Athletic if you have not already done so and read Kyle's stories, but he is not the only outstanding writer that they have there. They have a few others, and you can read a lot of great content, and you can also give it as a gift, which I am doing for a friend of mine this season, did last year, and it's you know, somebody it's hard to buy for. It's a great gift, and right now you get a free T-shirt if you give a gift. So
yeah, that's pretty sweet T-shirts, gray T-shirts with the Athletic logo.
So check that out at theathletic.com. It's a subscription service, but the trade-off is there's no pop-up ads and those kinds of things that you deal with when you get the content. Let's shift over to basketball. Another guy that you've written about extensively is Nick Richards, and he is, at this point, I think, developing that consistency that people have been clamoring for. The way I framed it up with a couple of guests last week, in the multinational corporation that is Nick Richards, you're certainly holding your stock right now. Are you trying to scrape up money to buy more?
I think I am, yeah. I thought what Cal said after the game, somebody asked him, is this just him now? And he said, I think he can say that now. This is who I am.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, will he be as productive against all the SEC teams they play and Louisville and whatnot? Louisville's going to be a challenge, as we now see from last night. They've got some size and length, and will he be as productive in those matchups? Maybe not, but I don't think he'll go back to zero. You know what I mean? I think we've seen enough from him to think that for the most part, Nick is going to be a legitimate contributor to this team.
You can look at numbers to make a case, but sometimes you just trust your eyes, and I see him consistently going after rebounds out of his area with two hands and challenging and hunting shots to block, which are the two of the main things that they've always had at the top of the list for him. And I see him focused on doing that now. And so I don't see that's, you know, you go through slumps, whatever, offensively. But those things, those are just, you know, effort, motor, all those kinds of things we've always talked about with him. And it seems that it has kicked in.
Yeah, I mean, even when he hasn't blocked a ton of shots this year, but he's had a couple games where he did. But even when he doesn't block them, there's so many plays where his giant outstretched hand is in the frame.
Yeah, or you see a player go in there. Oh, nope, not going in there.
Right. And, you know, if you're altering shots, that's almost as valuable as blocking them. I think it's also really important that he's figured out, and the staff has obviously figured out where he can get his shots that he's really comfortable with, that he makes just time after time after time, and now we're seeing him make them consistently in games. You know, that mid-range baseline jump shot, the elbow jump shot, the turnaround jump hook in the lane. He's 7 of 7 in the last game from the field. 67% shooting on the season. He's been really good at the free throw line, which tells you it's not really an anomaly that he started the season shooting well. He can actually, he's got a nice looking touch. Some of the guys have said he's like, you know, most of the guards, they do the 3.5-minute shooting drill. How many threes can you make? I think the big guys just do like a mid-range jump shot in that 5-minute shooting drill. And they've said Nick hits in the 60s, you know, 60s and 70s. In the 5-minute shooting drill. Over the last four games, he's averaging 16.5 points, 9.5 rebounds, and 3 blocks.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's strong.
Regardless of competition, at no point in his career has he put together a run like that. You know, he's had a few moments, a few and far between, but a few moments, never back to back to back to back to back. I mean, 4 consecutive really good games for him. Some of that, too, I think, is a credit to Ashton Hagans looking for and finding him. But also, I think in the approach, it feels to me like Calipari goes into these games now saying, like, let's get Nick going early. And I think last game it was EJ. Let's get EJ going. They let him shoot the ball, 14 times, which he's never done, EJ Montgomery.
With EJ, let's see if you picked up on this. I thought his body language, since he's come back from injury, has been so much better than it was in those early exhibition games. Just he plays with more of a light in his eyes, smiling more. He just seems to be enjoying playing more than he was there early.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was really strange and pretty concerning, the way he looked in preseason.
Yeah.
Just kind of checked out, it felt like.
Yeah, maybe it was just feeling the weight of the world on his shoulders. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody, you know, I mean, how many of us have written the, like, if Kentucky's going to be great, it's on him.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot for a sophomore. I mean, he's still a sophomore. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he looked. I mean, if you saw him in high school, people have been kind of critical of EJ. If you've seen him at his best, you kind of wondered like where is that over the last year plus at Kentucky, because he's a guy who was aggressive. People roll their eyes like, oh, he's a shooter. No, he's not. Yes, he is. I mean, he is a shooter. I've watched the guy go through workouts. I've watched him in some, high level state tournament games and AAU games be a shot maker. And so I think it was big for him to see some go down in the last game. He's probably a confidence guy, just like Nick. Mm-hmm. There's no question that for Nick Richards, the biggest issue was kind of between the ears for him for 2 years. Will he believe that he can be good enough? Kenny Payne talked about it. I think it was last year. Nick, there were times Nick would just clearly be thinking, do I even belong here?
Yeah.
And I think that happens with a lot of guys that don't immediately have success at Kentucky.
It is funny, and yet his coaches are saying, you're 7 feet tall, you have a 7'5" wingspan, you run like a deer, you shoot well. Who thinks you don't belong
here? Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I can't imagine if you roll me out at 18, 19 on this stage, Kentucky basketball stage, with a bunch of other guys that are pros, that are more ready, already more polished, that have played the game a decade longer than you. And then I go out and within the first 5 minutes I make a boneheaded mistake. I mean, there's no – I know 19-year-old me would have no chance of holding my confidence. And so I think it's been a 3-year process for Nick.
Kyle Tucker, athletic.com, theathletic.com. We'll be right back to wrap up this edition of the show. It's our final segment here with Kyle Tucker from theathletic.com. This day, 1980, our Donato slice of Wildcat history. Number 2, Kentucky over number 9, Ohio State at Rupp Arena, 70-64. Leading scorer for Ohio State was a guy named Clark Kellogg with 12 points. In that game.
Is that all right?
Yeah, he did. About 30 seconds left here. Anything you're working on next for the next story to challenge the feudal, to make the feudal challenge of passing the Ellen Calipari story?
No, this won't do that, but we have a sneaker series at The Athletic. Our NBA team is headed up, and we've had some college-related stories. And writing about True Blue Customs here in Lexington, Billy Hobbs, and how Willie Cauley-Stein essentially turned his hobby into a career, launched him overnight. It's pretty
cool,
by wearing a pair of his sneakers in a big moment. So,
and as we wrap this up, you were telling me the Ellen Calipari story, as popular as the Lynn Bowden story has become, and it's really taken off, still pales to the Ellen Calipari story.
Ellen, six times as many people have read and subscribed that. It's crazy. I don't know what made that thing go viral, but it did.
Kyle Tucker from TheAthletic.com here on The Leach Report.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report Radio Network. Miss a show? Catch the podcast at TomLeachKY.com or on the iHeartRadio app.
The following is an advertisement.
The lawyers of Vaughn Pettit Legal Group have over 60 years' experience helping people all over Kentucky solve their legal problems. We are a full-service, local law firm full of highly intelligent, hardworking people. From helping you start a business to employment law to estate and tax planning and many things in between, the lawyers of Vaughn Pettit Legal Group can help you solve your legal issues quickly and effectively. Located in Piwee Valley, you can reach us at 502-243-9797 and at www.